Welcome to RBC's Equity Capital Markets Roundtable. Our goal with this roundtable is to offer some timely thoughts and insights that are valuable for both our corporate and investing clients. Today, you'll hear a conversation between JT Degnan, Managing Director and Head of Real Estate and Financial Institutions, Equity Capital Markets, and Neil Chauhan, Managing Director, Insurance Investment Banking. Today's conversation was recorded at our Global Financial Institutions Conference in New York. Now let's dive into the conversation.
So JT, there's been a fair amount of activity in the capital markets more broadly. I wanted to get your thoughts on what you're seeing as it relates to the financial sector and any activity that you might be seeing thematically in ECM for us.
Sure. Well, thankfully, since I cover financial services alongside of real estate, we are seeing a pickup in activity in both sectors. If you go back to really the latter part of last year, Q3, Q4, we started to see some of the sectors come back to life. Insurance in particular, the BDC sector also started to show a great performance in the secondary market, which led to more comfort from issuers to contemplate raising IPO capital. So fast forward to Q4, the back half of Q4, we started to see semblance of insurance companies contemplating moving their time frame up when they were actually going to hit that go button and go public. And we saw a number of transactions, three in the insurance sector, with mixed reviews, but the first one that came out in January of 2023, now I'm going way back, had a great outcome. And I think if I look at where they're trading today, their performance is close to 135% from where they priced their transaction. So you had some additional companies come after that with, I would say, pretty good outcomes, both from a pricing perspective and a aftermarket performance perspective, which is critical, right? Because if we're going to have other companies come to the market, they need to be well supported by investors, not just at pricing, but, you know, as they continue to grow in the public markets. BDCs, it's been an area around specialty finance where there's been a significant increase in activity, both from an IPO standpoint and also a follow-on standpoint where we're seeing capital being raised for growth and deployment. What's interesting, and we're going to get into this a bit later, is what types of investors are showing up now, particularly in the BDC marketplace. And that's partly being driven by this dynamic in the direct lending and private capital markets, which has been a point of, you know, major commentary here at the conference and frankly everywhere on the street. It's a big area of focus for investors, both on the public and private side. So, Neil, I just wanted to shift gears a little bit, too. I touched on the capital market activity around insurance. And by the way, I think we're going to see continued runway. We're likely to see, you know, a handful of private assets come to the public market, all with a little bit of a different approach to their businesses. But given the success that we've seen thus far with some of the deals that have come to the market, we do suspect as a firm, and I think the street does, both underwriters and investors, that you're going to see continued activity there. We just went through earnings season, and you know the backdrop remains constructive. So the P&C insurers delivered pretty broad-based updates over their earnings cycle here. Premium growth is doing quite well. Pricing trends are favorable. There's some question around how long the hard market is going to last. Some people think we're in the sixth inning. Some people think we're in the ninth. We talked to a lot of corporate clients, but curious what you're seeing out there.
Look, I think the pricing has backdrop is certainly positive, and it really does vary by line. So not all markets are seeing the same ring in each individual line. And so broadly speaking, I think there's a favorable upward trajectory in rates. And the important question really is, you know, are we getting rate in excess of loss cost trend? Because the other factor here is truly inflation, and loss costs are going up. And that's part of what's driving the hard market. I think insurance companies are really realizing that they need additional rate in order to meet their cost of capital. So certain lines are performing and getting more rate than other lines. But by and large, I think the sentiment is very positive certainly within specialty P&C.
A follow-up question to that, because we are here to talk about equity capital market activity. So circling back to that favorable backdrop, what do you think is going to be the key for the next class of insurance platforms that, you know, are considering coming to the public markets and differentiating themselves for investors? Because it hasn't been up until recently where we've seen companies go public in the insurance sector. And now we're, I won't say contemplating a wave, but certainly a handful of assets and management teams are considering coming public. But what do you think is going to be the key differentiator for those issuers should they come?
It's a great question. And with all businesses, it really does come down to management and ability to execute. So the right management team is probably one of the first things that investors ought to think about as they consider some of these private names and their desire to go public and execute in this market. But, you know, investor perspective, what I often think about is the strength of the balance sheet, particularly in this market. You know, we've had a few names in the fourth quarter that had adverse development on some reserves. So that really does shake investor confidence. And I think having confidence in the balance sheet is important because that takes the question off the table. And then with that solid balance sheet, the ability to generate a return on equity on that balance sheet. So I do think there's a high correlation between valuations and return on equity. So as you can demonstrate a steady, attractive return on equity in excess of your cost of equity, those companies tend to trade at a premium. JT, as you mentioned, there have been a number of business development companies raising capital, with private credit and direct lending becoming more and more topical here. How is that impacting the public markets and public BDCs?
I think it's very supportive for a couple of reasons. One, I think, you know, if you go back to the model and really when it was created, it was right after the global financial crisis in 2008 when you started to see private credit become more of a prominent, you know, force in global financial markets. And now you fast forward to today, there's some permanency there, considerable permanency. And some have said, you know, they're competing with the investment banks, right, and providing capital to corporate America. There's no question that that's happening. But I would also say that, I mean, if you talk to some of the larger credit providers and BDCs that are out there, both public and private, they would tell you that they're working in a collaborative way with investment banks. So when I think about BDCs in the public domain, institutional investors, I think, have a better appreciation for what the BDC, their business development corporation model, brings to the lending world. And, you know, not all lenders are created equal. A tremendous amount of cost, both on the capital side and on the human capital side, goes into having these premier, you know, business development corporations. Scale is really, really critical. And if anything, we've seen in our conversations with institutional investors, when we bring a company public, and we've had three BDCs go public in 2024, and there's a handful of others that will likely come, one of the first questions they ask about is not just track record, but it's how scalable is your business? And are you going to be able to not only, you know, commit and provide capital to growing companies, but also support larger companies? And if you look at some of the biggest platforms out there, the Blue Owls, the Blackstones, the Sixth Streets, you know, these are folks that are in the areas of the world, they are definitely competing with the banks, but they're also partnering with the banks. So some of these smaller platforms, they will be able to get support in the public markets from institutional investors. But it's really these category killers that I think are creating a more institutionally followed segment in the public markets. And that's allowing these smaller entities to come to the markets. What I would say on the investor side is, I've done a number of IPOs many, many years ago, and a lot of those IPOs were transactions that didn't have a huge institutional following. You fast forward to today, you have tremendous support from blue chip institutional investors, hedge funds, mutual funds, pension funds, sovereigns are even coming into the sector right now, supporting public offerings. So that dynamic, I think, is going to stick and only get, you know, more and more prominent. So I'm looking forward to what the future has to bear for us. But I think, you know, as the marketplace continues to grow, we're going to see you know, even larger IPOs and bigger platforms come to the market. And we're going to see continued institutional support, as well as our wealth management partners across the street that love the credit, love the equity upside in these vehicles. And so it will be interesting.
Okay, JT, you touched on insurance, specialty finance. Are there other sectors that you think will see activity from an IPO perspective?
For sure. I think where we're going to see additional activity is in the alternative asset manager arena. Partly, if you think about what we were talking about prior around a private credit as an asset class, if you will, and you look at these alternative asset managers that have various strategies, far different than, you know, a traditional manager, a mutual fund, or someone that's a long only. And really, their business model is predicated not only on stock picking performance and all those things, but AUM. And if you look at where capital is going, it's going to the alts area predominantly. We are starting to see capital go back into the passive and active traditional managers, but there's a big valuation gap, right? Where those folks are trading in the public markets versus where the alternative asset managers are trading. So if you go back to 2007, the first to go public was Blackstone. And then we had the global financial crisis. Took a while for them to get their public footing from a valuation standpoint. They're executing on their business quite well, but they never, or at least for a period of time, didn't get the valuation they deserved. Then you had KKR, you had Apollo, you had Carlyle, all coming out after that over a series of years. I anticipate we're going to see a healthy amount of private alternative asset managers come to the market, quite big ones, that have, as I said, multi-pronged strategies, and they're going to continue to grow, behind the public curtain and then present themselves to the public, I think, in pretty short order. Gives them a currency to continue to grow, not only, organically, but also externally. Having that currency is quite appetizing for sellers. And right now, if you look at kind of the traditional managers or you look at some of the smaller alt guys, it's a race, who's going to get larger. And if you're subscale, chances are it's going to be harder for you to compete with the big guys. And so having a currency, I think, is going to be helpful for some of the folks that are considering coming to the markets. We're hearing from investors on a pretty consistent basis. They would love to see more investment opportunities in the asset management sector. They're not asking for traditional asset managers. They're asking for the alts guys. So, consistent with the feedback we're getting from investors right now on the alts, we're seeing that on insurance, we're seeing that on specialty finance. So I do think that the supply that we anticipate is going to be met with pretty robust and healthy demand. I will say investors are very disciplined in how they underwrite companies. And I think the best management teams will have a good show. You can imagine who those folks are. And I think this year is going to be pretty constructive as we sit here in the first quarter of 2024 with a growing pipeline of not just financial oriented platforms, but more broadly. Here at RBC, we've got pretty healthy pipeline of, I would say, pretty well-diversified businesses by sector. And as long as we continue to have a constructive backdrop, which I think we will, as interest rates start to have a clearer picture and where we're going to go, and I think we're getting there, I think the equity market's going to continue to get support from all parts of the world, not just here in the United States, but global dollars will come into the marketplace.
Thanks for listening in to this episode of RBC's Equity Capital Markets Roundtable. Join us next time as we continue to discuss the latest issues in the ever-changing ECM landscape. If you have any questions or want to continue the conversation, feel free to reach out to JT or Neil or any member of our Equity Capital Markets team. Thanks, and see you next time.
This content is based on information available at the time it was recorded and is for informational purposes only. It is not an offer to buy or sell or a solicitation, and no recommendations are implied. It is outside the scope of this communication to consider whether it is suitable for you and your financial objectives.